Welcome to the Building Wealth Through Commercial Real Estate podcast, where we will discuss with industry experts on how to create wealth and build passive income from apartment buildings, self-storage, mobile home parks, and much more. Here is your host, Jonathan Way.
Welcome to the Building Wealth Through Commercial Real Estate podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Way, and I'm the founder of Greystone Capital Group, my investment firm. If you're interested in passively investing with us, please visit greystonecapgroup.com and join our investor network. Okay, and now on to the show. Hello, and thank you for coming on the show. Can you tell me a little about your background?
Hi, Jonathan. Yeah, thank you for having me. My name is Ekaterina Stepanova, and I'm based out of New York, in Bronx, New York, for that matter. And I am mobile home park owner, investor, and operator. And I own parks with my partners. I have two partners out of Georgia and California. And we own together three mobile home communities in Florida, Michigan, and Arizona. And so it's kind of all over the place.
It's very, very exciting. Thank you. That's very exciting. I love mobile home parks too, but I like to learn a little bit more about it and our audience. So can you tell us, why do you love mobile home parks? And then how do you select and identify the markets?
Well, sure. Mobile home parks, I just really love the concept of it. It's a community, and you can definitely see how people really get together and, you know, in that neighborhood, in that area, when for example, you visit and you organize an event or something like that, you can definitely see it feels different. People, you know, the spirit of it is different than in a, let's say, an apartment building. It's just a different concept. It's like a little village. So I like that concept. I also like the concept of allowing people actually to own their home, so they can become homeowners and start building their credit history, their ownership through that opportunity of having this affordable housing available to them. And I really enjoy that I'm able to provide this at a very affordable cost.
Right. Is it called lease to own? Is that what you do? Rent to own?
It may be called different terms depending on the state. And it oftentimes is called lease to own, rent to own, and so on. But yes, that is available. There is also, of course, option that you can just sell the home outright, and then you just basically leasing the land, the lot to your resident.
Okay.
So there are different options available.
Okay, great. And how do you identify a market that you like?
We like markets that are definitely, you know, mobile home parks are located traditionally in the secondary treasury markets. You're not going to see them downtown or in your large major city. They usually on outskirts.
Okay.
So we would identify our market. First, what you look at is what is the price of a single family home in the area. We usually look at the just as small as the zip code, and because you don't want to be in competition with the single family housing. So traditionally, or just a rule of thumb, you want to have a single family home be worth over $100,000. And then you would look at the population. Of course, you don't want a declining, and you want to make sure that rents for studio rents are, I would say, probably above $550. This is a little more detailed, but I'll explain. This is simply because, again, one more rule of thumb here is your lot rent is normally half of what the studio rent in the area is, and you don't want it to be too low. And there are different explanations for that, but you pretty much want, you don't want to be in competition with single, with stick-built housing, and you want the area to be stable and not supported just by single employer. So you want the diversity.
Okay. Okay, great. So are you saying studio mean a regular, like a condo studio? Is that what you're referring to?
Yep. That is correct. Mm-hmm.
So what you're trying to, so it's very smart. You're saying that don't be in competition with those studios or those single house versus a mobile home park. Okay. I see.
Yeah.
I understand. Mm-hmm. So are you looking for growing, increasing population, 100,000 or more in value? And you want to be careful of the competition because if they have a lower rent, then maybe they could rent rather than living in a mobile home park. Those are your points. Okay.
That is correct. And in terms of population, we just definitely don't want it declining. We don't have to necessarily have it growing. And that's simply because there is nothing really on the market more affordable than usually a home in a mobile home community. So we're not necessarily afraid of competition on the way up. We just don't want to be kind of have, you know, be in a competition with a stick-built housing. That's all.
Okay. And when you do your underwriting, what do you normally look for in your income and expenses?
As we specialize in value-add properties, we always look what we can improve. And that is similar to apartment buildings. You see if you can do management turnaround, if you can have rent upside, if you can have infill upside, if you may be able to, do some, that has to do with the management turnaround, which means just have some efficiencies added to your property. So, and that is our really goal, to find value add a property that we can improve. And we would normally, just our team, we normally like to purchase properties where we can increase value and probably double our investment in the course of 2 to 3 years.
Okay, and when you say value add, you mean maybe improving the property, make it nicer, changing management to maybe lower the cost? And what is the normal cost? Is it 30% versus 50% in an apartment building? What's the normal cost expense you see on a stabilized, mobile home park?
Well, if we're talking about stabilized property that has all units are tenant-owned units and all utilities, the city utilities that are built back, and maybe trash is built back and all other, lawn mowing and other things like that also built back to your resident, you can actually see expenses as low as 30%. However, it's more often than not probably closer to 40%. If some of the properties, and I'll just have to say this so people don't think that mobile home community is just panacea and 30% is just the, you pick any park and it's 30%. Well, not really. If you are, there are areas where tenants prefer renting and they do not want to purchase. And with that comes maintenance expense. So if you are owning a community that is primarily park-owned homes, your expenses could be closer to 40%.
Oh, park-owned homes. Okay, yeah, because you have more expenses because you own them, and you take more of the maintenance around those homes. That's why.
Correct. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But if it's not park-owned home and you only own the land and you only pay those utilities, then it should be a lower expense ratio.
Correct. In that scenario, and pretty much in any scenario, when you own a community, you would probably will see if there is a way for you to pass along utility expenses such as water and sewer to your residents at some point. That would be considered stabilization. And at that point, you can actually achieve expense ratio of closer to 30%.
Okay.
That is absolutely correct.
Right. So I guess use the RUBS method or some kind of allocation that is fair and appropriate to the tenant to build back those water and utilities.
Or you just simply install water meters and pass along expenses that way. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So separately meter them so exactly know exactly how much the water is being used and you can pass along the cost.
Exactly.
Is that very expensive though, the water meters to install in mobile home parks?
Well, it depends on the size, depends on the meters. But you know, the ones that we just installed in our most recent property, they were Wi-Fi, really probably latest model of water meters. They were, I think, 350 a pop, but that doesn't include the installation because the plumber will need to install them. And but it's definitely worth it because then you are their Wi-Fi. They send reports straight to your rent manager, the software that we use for property management, and it reads automatically. You have access to the portal, which again shows you daily consumption. It shows you whether there is a leak in the park or there may be intermediate, you know, smaller leaks, or if there is a meter not reading or something is being erased. So that is actually very convenient and just also very good way to just preserve water.
Right, right. That's great. I really love the idea. I love technology and Wi-Fi. And I'm doing it for my apartment. Mm-hmm. I'm using a company, SAS, Water Conservation, and they're coming to help me install water meter of my apartments and making sure that we can take out the new old toilet, put new toilets in that's more energy efficient, and the shower heads to lower the water bill. Absolutely. Okay, great. So in your underwriting, what would you say is a good deal? How would you identify a good deal?
Well, I would say that you definitely, well, in our case, we would want to have our money returned in a couple of years. So 2 to 3 years, that is for us going to be a good deal. So we're just looking at the bottom line, and usually that tends to be properties over 50 spaces, you know, with enough upside, of course, that we could improve, decrease expenses, and generally infill. We do like properties that may have, let's say, park-owned homes that we can convert, and that would also mean that we'll decrease in expenses, and it will also mean that there may be vacant park-owned homes, which is a relatively easy upside. So it means you don't have vacant lots on which you have to source and bring new homes. So you can actually just repair and put the existing units online, which is much easier upside.
And let's talk about, okay, so let's say you like that deal, you underwritten it, and in a few years, it gives you the return that you're looking for, the IRR, then you're happy and you put a offer into the property, an LOI. So let's say in the due diligence phase, what do you do and how do you conduct that, and what do you look at in mobile home park versus apartment buildings?
Well, I cannot really compare specifically with apartment buildings because I haven't done due diligence. I've done underwriting, but I haven't done due diligence on apartment buildings. But due diligence on mobile home communities is rather extensive because we have basic underwriting, we have financial underwriting, there is offsite, onsite due diligence. You know, something to note for mobile home communities that you would need to do utilities inspection, which is could be there is a variance of utilities that you would need to inspect, and you would need to know how to. For example, it could be different types of sewer. So if this is not a city sewer, then it may be septic, it may be wastewater treatment plant, it may be lagoon, which we wouldn't buy. There may be lift station for water. If it's not a city water, it could be a well. So you do need to know how to inspect these type of utilities. So I think that is probably the biggest difference between mobile home communities and apartment buildings. Probably also, I would say there is something new that probably apartment building buyers won't have to inspect, but we mobile home park investors will, which is the zoning and health department records. So we just want to make sure that community is legal and conforming, and that it's zoned for the number of spaces as you have occupied. You have to check on the setback requirements, make sure you can actually refill the lot should it become vacant, and so on. So there are definitely some specifics that you need to be aware of when you're doing due diligence.
Okay, great, great. That's great insights. Normally on my properties, I also have a third party company comes out and does a lease audit. They do, I do some due diligence and I get quotes. Do you do you hire someone outside who does it for you, or you do everything yourself?
We do it ourselves. Leases will also have our attorneys check, obviously, as well as title commitments, and we have park rules reviewed prior to taking over. But otherwise, we inspect leases, we inspect park owned home titles, we inspect, well, we take a look, of course, at the survey, well, we bring it to the attorney as well. We do inspect financials beyond, of course, P&Ls and rent rolls and delinquencies and bank statements and taxes and CapEx receipts and so on and so forth. That is a lot of work. We do it ourselves, biggest part of it.
And normally, how long do you give yourself in the contract to do due diligence?
45 days normally.
45 days. Okay, that's a lot of work in a short time period to ensure whether you want like the deal or not. Because if you go to Dylan, you find something that's really a big issue, like a lagoon or sometimes undisclosed, then you might not want the deal because it might not make sense.
Yeah. Well, lagoon, you can pretty much spot before you even make an offer on the park. You just go on, Google Earth, and you will see that, that little pond over there is probably a lagoon.
Yes, exactly. So someone tried to sell me a mobile home lagoon, and I was too new to mobile home parks. I asked a lot of questions, but I had a sense it wasn't, my sixth sense that it was not good. So can you explain why a lagoon versus a well versus, why is that not a good deal?
Well, that not necessarily means it's a bad deal. It just, you really have to be knowing what you're doing when you're purchasing a lagoon. Aside from the fact that it's the older version of obviously a septic system, and it's no one really builds lagoons anymore because it just takes up a lot of space and it's not something that people want to live near. You just have to account for maintenance. You have to know how to do it. And you really have to know whether how the city or your county or village is looking at that lagoon. Is this something that really bothers them and they will make you hook up to the city? And where are the city lines, utility lines, and where, how much it's going to cost you to hook up to them and so on and so forth. You have to really just do your due diligence on it. Well, I have a friend of mine, he is a private utility specialist, Philip Merrill, and he just bought a park on the lagoon because he knows exactly how to deal with private utilities and lagoons. He knows how to inspect them, and he knows how to say, analyze and tell how long that particular lagoon is going to last. So you definitely have to know specifics, very, very, specific purchase.
Yeah,
not
that's
right
why
for everyone.
Right. So any amateur or first time dealer would not want to do a lagoon deal because they probably don't understand the nature of it or how to, the cost maybe involved.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more extensive than what you projected, right? Right.
Correct. And it's just very not straightforward. Of course, the city water and sewer are just much easier to maintain. You just maintain the lines, and that's about it. With lagoons, there are just so many more variables.
Right, because I think one
and
fact...
testing and so on.
Right, because one fact, if it rains, it overflows, then you have a problem too, right? If it's too much water in there. Yes.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
There are many, many factors. Yep.
Right, right. The general explained to me all these factors. I'm like, wow, this is very complex. There's a very complex way to also clean it and maintain it. And it was very complex. I was like, so interesting. Okay. And so I guess what's the biggest thing you'll watch out for in due diligence for your tips, you say?
Well, there are many things that can go wrong, and that's why I always, we don't really celebrate when we put the park on the contract. It means absolutely nothing. It seems like it's a good deal. You've done all your test marketing and you probably called the current park providers and vendors, and probably you did some asking around and probably you called the city
and you probably got the maybe gave a call to your mortgage broker and found out that yes, the financing is going to be available. So you put park under contract, and still it does not guarantee that you won't discover something during your diligence. And it can be just a number of things. From it could be, you know, maybe taxes are going to go really high, or it may be, you know, some sort of zoning issue. There are so many things, really. Mm-hmm. It may be infrastructure. It may be you may discover, of course, large delinquencies, mm-hmm. or there is a really a number of things that can go wrong. So it just yes. really until you've done all your work and mm-hmm. you checked everything there is to check on your due diligence list, you just don't know whether you're going to close on this, whether it's really truly a good deal.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And what would you say that you did a couple of deals, you're a mobile home park a specialist now.
Well,
what was one bad experience that you knew that you learned from that you can share so we can understand the experience you had?
Well, I just have to say, when you set your investment criteria, I would just highly recommend to stick with that. Because we had one experience when, you know, also I didn't mention, but along the way, as we were purchasing the parks that we own currently, we also wholesale two parks. So we were involved in more transactions than three at this point. So it's actually a total of five. But so we did due diligence on all those parks. And something that really stands out to me is all these parks were value-add parks, and for whatever reason, we just found it was a good deal. It wasn't a stellar deal, but we thought, this is probably very easy for us. Why don't we go and do this turnkey deal? And guess what? Your investors are not used to you doing turnkey deals if you're constantly showing them value-add deals. And it will be very hard for you to sell them on something completely different if you have never done this before. Even if you can say this is much lower risk, but if they're not used to it, it will take you much longer to get them warmed up to that idea. So I'll just say, stick with your investment criteria. If you are deciding to veer to something else, you have to allow ample time to get your investors on board with that and have a really good explanation as to why you're doing this.
Oh, okay. Interesting. And that'll lead to a great thought, because you said that your investors. So how do you raise capital, and where do you find your investors?
Well, so far we were very lucky. And again, this probably I would attribute to us doing pretty much same deals. Value-add deals. So we currently have our partners, probably they come with us from deal to deal to deal, simply because they know that this is what we do, and this is what they kind of know what to expect. So mm-hmm. we were very blessed, I would say, to have them with us throughout these deals.
Okay, great. So I guess what are your friends and family first, 506B or 506C?
No, these were friends, and also from these were friends, really, industry friends who we did joint venture with them. So far that's been, we were able to just get away with that simply because they knew the type of deals that we do. So they were able to put up, you know, greater amounts. So we didn't have to even do syndication. So we were able to do fewer people, larger sums of money.
Okay, great. So you did a JV instead of a syndication. Okay, so
exactly.
You got friends mm-hmm. in your circle to say, hey, we got a mm-hmm. great deal. Are we underwritten? And would you mm-hmm. want to invest with us on mm-hmm. this deal? And mm-hmm. I guess some said yes, because they believed in your vision and believed in your underwriting. Okay, great.
Yep.
Yeah. Great. So how is that? Is that performing to what you expected, or did not? Or did one of the deals not perform to what you expected?
Well, so far we are about to sell one of the deals. At the smaller park, it's a 40 space park, and we are planning on refinance another one in Q1 of 2021. So once we do these exits, I will tell you. So far, you know, we do underwrite very, very conservatively. I mean, really, really conservatively. So I would, so far, they do perform better than we planned, but we also know that we just underwrite super conservatively. So yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Again, until you exit, you cannot say how well you did.
Right, because at the disposition, and you know how much money.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you just want to be cautious and just wait until it's done. Really.
Sure. And how did COVID-19 impact mobile home park in your deals?
Well, so far it hasn't been super impactful because I would say people in our communities, they do work, you know, they do work service jobs, or and if they were to be laid off, they normally also can pretty quickly find something else for the similar pay. And thankfully, we also had, you know, some of them, whether they were government or state programs, that they were helping them out. They sometimes were getting assistance, financial assistance, that was greater even than the normal monthly pay. So it did not really affect us too bad, thankfully. And yes. Also, for example, in the parks, like the one in Florida, people there, they are mostly on state income, so that they were not really affected by it.
Oh, you mean those like government housing, state income?
No, they're on the Social Security.
SSI.
So that, yeah, they were not really affected by that.
Okay, that's very good, because sometimes in the multi-family, you know, Class C, and they lose a job as a waitress, or they work in a you know, food industry and beverage industry, and then they lose their jobs. You know, and then you might not be able to collect the rent, you know, because they lost their jobs.
Yeah. So far. You know, whenever we had people, yeah, they were pretty much able to find another job pretty fast, and the state programs were helping out with the rent. And as I mentioned, sometimes they were even greater. The assistance from the government was even greater than the normal monthly take home pay, which was incredible for them.
Yes. So that's great. That's great. I'm glad the government helped and helped
come
in,
because
you know, understand what the country is suffering from COVID-19 and it helped relief. That's wonderful. Okay. And what would you say, I guess, what was your best advice, someone's listening, from your experience?
I would say if you were to choose mobile home park industry as the industry for you, for your business, for your investment, I would say don't rush into it. Take time to learn it. It's really a great industry, great people, and take time to meet people, take time to learn, take time to really study it before you just go and buy parks, simply because it's not a matter of units. It's really a matter of how profitable each unit is, if we're just talking numbers. So you can be broke with 1,000 units, and you can be doing really, really well for yourself and for your family with 100 units. So I just encourage you to really study the business and be a great operator, a great investor, and do great with less, rather than just being on a buying spree and living parks half turned, half, you know, half done, as you just rushing through on your way to another acquisition.
Okay, great advice. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jonathan.
Thanks for listening. For more information, you can find us online at www.graystonecapgroup.com. Check back weekly for new episodes. See you again next time.